Work session for May 2nd. May Day plus one. And note that we are a couple of folks short. Councilors Collette and Dirksen are both excused. But additionally, mention the fact that I believe it's at 3 o'clock, Councilor Craddock has a meeting someplace, and at 4 o'clock, I have a meeting someplace.
Let's think fast.
Think and, more importantly, talk fast. At least talk as fast as you think.
I can talk
speaking
for
you. Speaking of which, the first order of business is the COO report.
You know, between the debate experience and my family heritage as the oldest of a very busy family of four, I did not guard that. So, first, I wanted to apologize to you because I missed an attachment, and it's all entirely my fault, for an item that's on the council agenda for Thursday, which is Resolution 174797. Which delegates authority to the COO to offer employment agreements to department directors on your diet. Nathan's here to answer questions. It's a proposed draft that should have been attached. And what it does is it lays out the terms that would be there. You will see there are some blanks. And what the blanks are is, first of all, obviously the names and titles will be different. But then it allows me to negotiate salaries and vacations with folks as they enter the agreement. But what will be the same is the terms and conditions we're proposing that we agree to for separation. So if at the end of a relationship with a department director, either they want to leave or we want them to leave for whatever reason, the terms would be the same for all department directors. I would request that you guys can look at it. If you have concerns or reservations about the proposal, first just let me know, but we can postpone action. It doesn't have to happen Thursday. We just happen to have two vacant director positions right now, so I'd like to get taken care of before we're in the place of offering jobs for our first director or OCC director.
The only thing that I've noticed just in a quick cast is on page 4, on termination without cause.
Go ahead.
Subsection B is termination without cause. Subsection 2 is dealing with COBRA, and it talks about until employed in another position with health coverage in effect or for 6 months, whichever is less.
I'm sorry, I missed that picture. Maybe have a copy. Go ahead and take it.
6 months.
Page 4.
Yeah.
B, section B, sub 2.
Right.
On the COBRA, and the time period is with, you know, employed in another position with health coverage in effect or for 6 months, whichever is less.
Right.
You know, a healthy female who's going through pregnancy, I worry about 6 months. I'm in private industry, I'm just used to a year. And so that was the first thing that came to mind. And then what if an employee is going through treatments for a major illness? So it just 6 months.
You feel like it's not generous enough? This is in the event that we tell someone we don't want them anymore for
right.
reasons. So you would like to have the term. I mean, it's fine with me. I was just trying to think about what.
I've had personal experience with the 12 months.
Treatment
well.
Plan. So that's why I would just like to consider it 12 months versus 6 months.
Happy to be more generous. I was trying to really be quite thoughtful in my stewardship of the agency's resources.
My recommendation would be if you're going to discuss different terms of the contract, maybe we do that
offline.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not sure this is the place to talk about.
Is this a generic?
It is a generic.
I'm not saying it wrong, I'm just saying. So we just would be offering that to, well, yeah, I agree with you, Nathan, actually, now that I think about it.
Well, okay, it's a session Thursday, or at least.
We may have an executive session.
If you want to talk about the terms in this agreement, I agree with Nathan that we should talk about in an executive session, so we can talk to you about what the reason was, our thought process behind this. No, it's fine.
Well, we may not have, I don't think Nathan is necessarily saying an exec session, there may not be a
okay.
You may not be able to do it that way.
Okay.
And it'd just be helpful to understand other practices and best practices in relation to this.
Sure.
But But the details of the contract, you're saying, will be not necessarily taken up on Thursday. The details will be subsequent, or are they?
These details will be the provisions. And I will also tell you, this is exactly what you've approved recently for the zoo director and for the general manager of the zoo bank.
I think what does it delegates the authority to market and negotiate. What the code requires is that you approve any funded contracts. You know, the terms in a lot of ways are in some ways in the discretion of the COO. Whether you want to allow written employment agreements is up to the council.
So would this have been an attachment to the resolution or the staff report?
The staff. Well, both.
Those things can always be negotiated individually.
Well, then, and if they were negotiated, then I would have to come back to you for approval of those specific
So it's, you only get the authority to do it individually if you go by the standard.
So this would give me approval to negotiate these terms with directors. And then if I wanted to vary from those terms, I would have to come back. So if I had a director that wanted to negotiate these terms differently, then I would have to come back and go to them.
So in fact, one of the reasons for having this offline, whatever that format is that these wind up being the terms of employment for somebody.
Correct.
And therefore subject to, probably to confidentiality.
Well, I think the real issue at play is that if, I'm happy to talk to y'all individually.
And one reason why it'll be helpful for me to have the opportunity to talk about this offline is I don't know what our general employment agreement is
for
any other employees in the organization. So that would be.
And I'm also happy to discuss these issues with anyone offline.
Sure.
Discussions with various people about how to answer good or bad. And though you do have multiple agreements in place with similar terms, which are consistent. So that may be one of the reasons why we have sort of a consistent generic agreement for everything, which is somewhat generous.
Which I don't think is unusual, but. Given the political landscape around the Affordable Care Act, particularly around pregnancies and pre-existing conditions and treatments for major illnesses, I think for me that is a factor that has changed in the last several months.
So in the interest of time, because you have a lot of other things on the agenda, I will pull this from Thursday's agenda and we'll come visit with y'all and we'll schedule it after this conversation. Okay, here we go. Second thing I'd like to do is introduce Nathan Duffy. He's our brand new employee. Come on up. Nathan served as our brand new diversity program manager. Before I ask Nathan to introduce himself, I guess that there's a few people I want to thank. I want to thank Amy Kruger, Carrie Meyer, and Stacey Hopkins for all the work that they've done in the logistical work of the diversity program manager. Since Bill Tolbert got ill, but really, particularly in the last 6 months, his death. So it's a tough act to follow. Bill Tolbert, but Nathan's going to do it, and he's going to do it in his own style. So Nathan, I'd love it if you wanted to just introduce yourself.
Sure. Hello, everybody. I come by way most recently of Lewis and Clark College, where I was the director of inclusion and multicultural engagement. Prior to that, I was a senior assistant of admissions and coordinator of multicultural recruitment at the same school. Now, I've been there, or I was there, for the past 4 years. Prior to that, my background was in education in secondary schools, and I was a middle school English and social studies teacher, so I know a lot of different rungs on the education ladder, and was a 10th grade English teacher in Cali, Colombia as well. So I've seen youth come up through those various stages and go to college and work with staff around how to be inclusive and equitable in our approaches with education. I won't take up a lot of time. I'll take a schedule.
Yeah, welcome aboard.
Welcome.
I'm at your service, and please feel free to contact me anytime. Thank
you. Great.
We'd like to have you.
Cool.
All right, that's all I have. I have another two, but I thought that was enough.
That's okay.
That's great.
Thanks for being expeditious. Yes, sure.
I just wanted to ask the discussion that occurred last week regarding the
surcharge or that they're discussing on how those funds get divvied up. Would that be coming to us? This is what the state legislature is working on, the state transportation package.
Yeah, remember what we said is that every 2 weeks we're going to come talk to you about what's going on with transportation, and so we talked about it last week, but we haven't talked about it. I know that there are things happening.
Okay.
I'm sorry that Council Harrison will miss it.
Again.
She missed it last week. We'll get to it this week. But yeah, it's coming.
Right. And what we reported last week won't change, although the situation may change. Okay. Solid waste operators procurement process for transportation and disposal contracts.
You've been mentioning being pressed for time, and I think it's graphic here.
We've just been watching all the garbage go away.
Yeah. Every moment we take, there's more stuff going in the trash can. Showed up. Okay,
it's the ultimate screen saver.
Yeah, well, you'll see it again. Yeah.
Okay.
In case you aren't feeling the pressure that we have. Good afternoon, Council President Hughes and Metro Councilors. I'm Paul Slyman, your Director of Property and Environmental Services. Today I'm here with two of my staff to provide an overview of the procurement for transport and disposal of solid waste from Metro's two public transfer stations, Metro Central and Metro South. We have about a 20-minute presentation prepared and 45 minutes on your agenda, so this should leave ample time for questions and answers afterward. We will incorporate a couple of natural pause points as we go through, and we'll ask if you have any questions along the way. First, I will set the context for this work within the broader Solid Waste Roadmap program. Then Tom Chamoff will describe the scope and the scale of the procurement. Finally, Will Elder will share staff work conducted to date, as well as the timeline for what you can expect moving forward, and a proposed strategy for the form of our solicitation. Now for the context. As a visual aid, I'm going to refer to a new animated graphic that you got a preview of our communications department has produced with the general public audience in mind. That graphic is now live on Metro's website. But before I do, let me remind us of the boards behind me. Those boards represent the projects in the Solid Waste Roadmap program, or the major questions that we are answering along the way. And as you well know, these aren't necessarily new questions, nor would they be described as rocket science, but some of them are quite hard. They're just really inconvenient questions to answer as we create the system that best serves us for the future. Let me also pause and remind you of the benefits that we are seeking in answering each of those important questions. As we work on these projects, we are endeavoring to protect people's health, protect the environment, get good value for the public's money, ensure the highest and best use of materials. We like to say it's not waste until you waste it. Remain adaptive and responsive in managing these materials, and serve all types of customers. Now, we'll switch to the infographic. You're going to stay there. All right. Okay. So, Greater Portland still sends more than 1 million tons of garbage to landfills each year. Metro is working to put some of that garbage to use, such as to make compost or energy, to reduce the impacts of what we throw away. Nearly a fifth of Greater Portland's garbage is food, which could be used to make compost, energy, or other products. Removing this heavy, wet, messy component of our waste also reduces the climate impacts of landfills and may make it easier to recycle more from our trash. Metro is looking at ways to keep more food out of the garbage.
Metro's transfer station in Oregon City opened in 1983 and is currently squeezed for space. This makes it challenging to provide added services that our customers have come to expect and demand. We are considering ways to enhance this service provision in the southern part of the metro region. Our system of public and private transfer stations process Greater Portland's garbage and recycling for delivery to landfills and other destinations. Last summer, Metro Council adopted a number of transfer system configuration policies, such as rate transparency and tonnage allocations. Transfer stations sort and salvage some garbage and construction debris. Metro is considering whether new sorting methods could improve upon what transfer stations pull out of garbage for reuse and recycling. About 35 miles south of Portland, a facility in Brooks converts 550 tons of garbage into electricity every day. Metro is exploring opportunities to convert a portion of Greater Portland's garbage into energy. And then lastly, landfills. This category includes three distinct and important projects. As I said previously, most of Greater Portland's garbage goes to landfills. Metro is considering which landfills best protect the public's health and the environment and give good value for the public's money. We are also examining those materials that go to landfills that are exempt from certain fees and taxes. And then lastly, this project, we are examining our transport and disposal procurement. It's no surprise to anyone in this room that Metro's contracts for transport and disposal of waste expire December 31st, 2019. And the solicitation that you're hearing about today will procure transport and disposal services for January 1st, 2020 and beyond. Let me pause briefly before I turn it over to Tom, who will discuss the scope and scale of this procurement and see if you have any immediate questions about the context I've provided.
Yeah, go ahead, Tim.
Just a clarification on that recycling slide. Recycling only up to 5%, that was surprising me, and because I think you maybe had separated out before.
What you saw on the graphic there is not the source separate of recycling that many of us think of in the separate bin that perhaps at your home you roll out to the curb. Sometimes they're blue, they could be other colors. Or the recycling we do here in the office. That stuff that is already put in the trash. And if you were to get the wet, messy food out of there, as we're trying to do, what's left is drier and could be much more amenable to sorting. We've sometimes referred to that as advanced material recovery. And we believe that what's left in there might produce another 5% or so of material that could be recovered. A secondary question to that, Councillor Chase, would be if there are markets for those materials.
That makes sense. Thanks.
Okay.
All right, so I'm Tom Shamock. I'm your interim director, program director for Solid Waste Operations. And before I turn things over to Will, I want to impress upon you the importance of the magnitude of this project that Will is managing and how this represents the largest solid waste procurement we've conducted in years. To give you some perspective on that, these contracts that we're going to talk about today will cover roughly 500,000 tons of the region's landfill waste. And that's the landfill waste that goes through metros to publicly owned transfer stations, Metro Central and Metro South. Now that 500,000 tons, kind of put in perspective of all the waste that goes into our current contracted landfill, or the original landfill, is shown on this pie chart over my shoulder here. The royal blue slice of pie labeled Metro's transfer stations, that represents about 500,000 tons that goes into Columbia Ridge Landfill. That was the 2016 number. You can see that the Columbia Ridge Landfill accepts waste from many other customers as well, most of them out of the state of Oregon. We are the biggest slice from within the state of Oregon. There's another little blue slice of waste from our region that mostly comes from Troutdale Transfer Station. It's about 100,000 tons on this pie up here. So As you can see, Metro accounts for about one-fifth of the 2.5 million tons or so that go into Columbia Bridge landfill every year. We are a big enough customer for our firms to fight them. Maybe not so big that we'd make or break the bottom line. And I want to be very clear that Metro is procuring transport and disposal only for that waste that is landfilled from Metro South and Metro Center. We're not contemplating a 90% guarantee that gets a lot of discussion here. We're shopping for transport disposal for the tons through our transfer stations, and the other tons can go where they may in 2020. Now, just to touch on that 90%, one more time, to plug that in for us a little bit more, the 90% of the region's waste that is guaranteed to waste management landfill right now is a contractual provision negotiated almost 30 years ago in order to get a landfill built in the Oakland County. We've become the anchor tenant of that landfill, and that was how that came to be. We are no longer, as you can see, the anchor tenant at that landfill. I recall the Metro did have most of the waste coming through our facilities at that time. We simply have a smaller portion of it now. So what sort of dollar scale are we talking about here? Right now, Metro spends about $20 million a year on transport and disposal, including fuel. Over time, all the times we've sent to Columbia Ridge, that has amounted to something a little bit less than $600 million over the almost 30 years we've been sending waste to Eastern River. Aside from being the biggest source of employment for the county of Gillam, what Metro's waste means financially to that host community is about $1 million annually to the general fund in terms of host fees. And that's in a county with a population a little less than 2,000 residents. But presumably, Metro's waste would mean a similar amount of host community income where our waste goes somewhere else. In the time since we began shipping waste to the Columbia Ridge landfill, we've seen other landfills develop in the landscape, and as Will show you in a little more detail, we're now in the enviable position of having at least three very large landfills within 200 miles or so of our region, each one of which has 100 plus years of remaining capacity. Each one is owned by a different firm, and all those firms have expressed pretty strong interest in hosting our waste. So I think we can count on some pretty good competition for that waste as this procurement moves forward. The other enviable position we're in, as you know, is access to three different modes of freight transport. We have truck, rail, and barge, and we'll tell you a lot more about that in just a moment. And as with other roadmap projects, before I hand over to Will, we do look to our public benefits, as Paul said, to guide us in this endeavor, especially by leveraging competition among interested firms to get good value for the public's money, to retain good flexibility for managing the system, get high performance on environment and human health. And we really see an opportunity here to push private firms to increase their diversity in hiring and for inclusiveness in their host community and their planning and operations in the future. So with that, I guess I will pause and see if you have clarifying questions for me before we'll get to a little more detail.
Questions for Tom? Okay. Bill, let it go.
Thank you, Tom. Good afternoon, President Hughes, counselors. In the slide you see behind me is the old St. John landfill and Columbia Ridge landfill. It's been almost 30 years since waste from our region went from St. John's to Columbia. At the time, St. John's landfill closed. We had a few options for disposal. It'll be the first time since 1989 that Metro has competitively solicited for the disposal of those transfer station waste. In comparison, the last time we solicited a proposal for transportation was just 10 years ago. Since we closed St. John's, the disposal options available to the region have greatly increased. We have a chance to align both contracts starting January of 2020. Our team has been involved in researching and gathering information over the last 6 months that will help inform this process. Chuck Geyer formed a team that I have had the pleasure to work with. There are Simon Williams from Finance, Shane Amba from OMA, Matt Tracy, Penny Erickson, and Paul Inger from Operations. We've also been assisted with CH2ML, CH2ML staff, Lindsay Lopez, who's here, Dan Whistler, and Bob Walls. Many of the companies who helped us with this are also here today, and I'd like to thank them for their assistance. I'll have a chance to mention them individually later on in the presentation. So going from disposal at St. John's to our current system did not happen overnight, and we've learned a lot over this time. It's improved the solid waste system and the value the public gets from it. We've learned a lot about how to operate this system. We take pride in a system that is reliable, flexible, resilient, low-cost, and in many ways invisible to the people it serves. One of our short videos demonstrated last year, our customers put out their trash, the yard debris, and recycling at the curb each week, and later return that day, find it gone like magic. Methane is created in landfills when materials decompose in an oxygen-free environment. According to the EPA, methane holds Earth's radiation at a rate 25 times greater than that of carbon dioxide. In the metro system, we know the potential greenhouse gas impacts from methane at landfills are far greater than the CO2 emissions associated with waste transportation. In these photos behind me, you're seeing the flaring of methane and the methane to energy plant at Columbia Ridge. While flaring methane reduces greenhouse gas impacts, it becomes a lost resource. Whereas methane to energy plants both produce or reduce greenhouse gas impacts while making better beneficiary use of the energy. We know that converting methane from landfill to energy or fuel is a must for us. In 30 years, truck, rail, and barge have had improvements in emission and fuel efficiencies. We've maximized these truck transportation efficiencies over time with both greenhouse gas impacts and load capacity. In our last transport bid, Walsh achieved a 34-ton load, up from 30 for the same trip. While geography and rain affect landfill leachate management, most landfills basically function the same in how they're managed. Like transport, landfills have also become more efficient. Compaction of landfill waste has extended life expectancy without adding additional capacity. Extracting precious metals from ash, setting up recycling collection for self-haul, and managing methane to energy are all ways that landfills are getting more efficient. The landfills that have methane energy that we visited varied based on technology used for combustion, the methane generated, and also the use of heat recovery. Even with these advances in both sectors, how we transport materials to landfills still has the greatest variance and options. We learned that these contracts are more than just transactions. Developing strong partnerships with private providers and the communities they operate in is crucial. We will not be able to fully advance Metro's goals without their help. So the first people that the team had a chance to reach out to were the landfills. And initially we visited four landfills along the Columbia River. You can see that there. We visited Wasco, Roosevelt, Columbia Ridge, and Finley Buttes. The team also had an opportunity to go to Coffin Butte, which is down in the Willamette Valley. And then also we went up to Cowlitz County near Longview, Washington. So, while there are many similarities in landfill construction and all meet federal and state regulations, there are also differences. These include access by truck, rail, or barge, with some landfills being serviced by just truck, some by two modes, and others by all three. Rainfall amounts east and west of the Cascades impact how much leachate is generated and how it is managed. The capacities of the landfill vary from 10 years to over 100 years, and the mix of customer service and the relative amounts of wet and dry waste also vary by site. Lastly, the communities serviced by the six landfills vary greatly, with some serving small to medium communities and others large metropolitan areas. After meeting with the landfills, the team began to explore how we would get waste to the different sites by meeting with six transportation companies. As was mentioned earlier, Metro has the benefit of three feasible modes of transportation used for its disposal. Trucks, barge, and rail all service the region, and many landfills we toured are serviced by all three. We met with BNSF and UP Railroads, Boss and Tidewater Barge, and lastly, Walsh and Lindy Trucking. All these companies were interested in bidding for the transport of our waste. In order to understand how others were using different modes, we talked to other jurisdictions, including Seattle and Clark County, who use non-truck modes to transfer their waste. Seattle sends waste by train to Columbia Ridge, and Vancouver by barge to Finley Meadows. Looking forward to next week, we are also meeting with Daimler here in Portland to better understand trucking industry standards and advancements. While Daimler only makes trucks and does not transport, this is a great opportunity for the team to get smarter as well. So, for rail and barge transport, until we build a rail spur or a port at our stations, trucks will be needed to bring containers to the yards where they're loaded on barge or rail. Here are two multimodal yards. The one on the left is the Port of Morrow, and there you see Tidewater barges being unloaded where they're trucked to Finley Buttes. And then on the right is Roosevelt's yard, where containers are unloaded from the NSF trains and trucked to Roosevelt Landfill. The barge and rail companies that we've talked to have either expressed that they have yards here in the area or are confident that they can acquire those if we should choose those as our preferred transportation options. In addition to the public benefits that Tom and Paul have mentioned, we're also working with our diversity, equity, and inclusion team and procurement team. We've been reviewing Metro's equity strategy and new contracting rules to see how we can integrate this work into our procurement. The team knew early on that these procurements offered us an opportunity to see how we could use our diversity, equity, and inclusion strategies to help achieve the agency's goals around equity. This procurement will be one of the first we've been able to leverage these strategies with. We expect to ask our proposers for co-bid subcontractors to be given preference when used. These are businesses that have the certification Office of Business Diversity and Inclusion status. We will look for proposers to explore ways they can diversify their workforce, and we want them to demonstrate that they're committed to public engagement and have the full support of the communities that they operate in. So when we started this process, the team thought bundling the two contracts might be an option for us to consider. However, with all this work, it has led us to the following procurement strategy. First, we propose that a request for qualification be issued for disposal. This allows us an opportunity to express early on what's important to us and gives transport firms destinations to calculate costs. We will then issue an RFP for disposal and an RFP for transport. Our team believes this approach is preferred over bundling the disposal and transportation contracts for the following reasons. First, it gives us rate and operation transparency. This is important in supporting the public value of these contracts. It allows us to push our diversity, equity, and inclusion goals where we can have the greatest impact. And, for an example, large landfills all have preferred transport companies. Unbundling this allows the possibility for smaller trucking firms to bid. Lastly, we can continue our fuel savings by purchasing fuel directly and monitoring the use of fuel to push for continued efficiencies. So the next slide is a list of our project milestones. What you see are council or proposed council engagements there in red, but overall milestones. The first one is today. We're hoping that you have a good understanding of the procurement process and what we're proposing moving forward. We'd like to come back to council this summer as we're looking to give weights for evaluation criteria for those requests for proposals. Then also in summer, we would like to actually issue that request for qualifications for landfill and release draft RFPs for feedback from industry and the public. Ideally, with that feedback, we would finalize those RFPs and issue those come fall, where we'd be reviewing them through winter, and then in spring, announce the highest ranking firms. There will be negotiations that would follow through summer, and then we would like to come back in fall with final contracts to have you approve. And then, of course, as it was mentioned, these would all take effect January 1st, 2020. So this time, I'd like to turn it back over to Tom. We'll see if you have any questions or comments.
So
we can start if you have any clarifying questions for Will before we get on to questions in your worksheet.
Counsel, any clarifying questions from Will? I'm not seeing anybody jump out there. Good job, Will.
Front of you.
A little cheat sheet.
Our two questions for
general counsel. First one being,
what other information would you like to know about the transport and
disposal? Counselor Craddock, Counselor Harrington, and then.
I guess I do have a clarifying question. You stated this at the beginning, but I want to confirm. So, what's different about this process now? I mean, amongst many differences, but one of those is that this contract is only for the metro transfer facilities. And so what that means is that transfer facilities in the rest of the region that are privately owned, they will be initiating their own contracts for how garbage will be disposed, will be moved from their transfer station to the landfill. Is that correct?
Mostly, yes. The big facilities in the region aren't ours. Those folks don't really need contracts because they own their own land. Mm-hmm. So we'll be sending themselves the waste. The one independent, largest independent transportation, Pride Disposal, will surely, yes, look for a contract for that services.
May I ask a follow-up question?
Go ahead.
So will we still then have influence over how that's transferred, how it's transported, I should say? So right now there is continuity in the trucks that we use and the amount of tonnage that is moved in one truck. Will we still have influence over that? I recognize that's kind of outside this discussion, but it leads to my brain went through that thought.
We certainly can set operating standards at private transfer stations. I don't believe we have those in effect right now in terms of the load size that's expected or that type of thing. We can certainly talk about that.
Well, then I guess I would add that to my list of things I would like to learn more about. Not understand that better. I might not have full understanding of it.
Catherine.
I just have a few questions. To our current disposal contract, I just want to confirm, our current disposal contract is just for disposal of waste from our two transfer stations now, right? The policy, the 90% guarantee, so if you could just clarify the current system versus our focusing just on the two metro transfer stations.
Yes, that's a very nice distinction, thank you. If you are correct, the contract is for the disposal of our waste and...
No, I was asking about our... Sorry, correct. I was trying to ask about our transport contract.
What, transport?
Yes.
Well, that is absolutely only for the waste from our transfer stations. Okay. Current... The disposal one does get a little more complicated with...
No, I was just... I meant to ask just about transport. Thank you.
And before you get out, then that won't... And that isn't something that's going to change moving from... I mean, we're not proposing a change... The new system will not be different with regard to that particular thing than the current system.
We're not proposing a contract for anyone else's transport. It would be nice if the contracts that we ultimately signed for these services were available to others who might wish to piggyback on the excellent terms that we will have.
Okay, so I have some memory, I won't qualify it in any way, over the transport contract project that we had during my first term. And my question goes to the criteria. So from reading the work session packet and seeing it in your presentation as well, you're planning on bringing the evaluation criteria weighting to us, not the actual scores for submissions, but the weighting of them. And I have this very vague recollection that the criteria years ago came to us twice, and I don't remember at what stages. My recollection is that, remember the economy was pretty terrible. And I think we might have done some refinements on that weighting. And I can't remember the details and the whys and the what fors. We were in a similar position of looking at multiple modes. Today, we have that procurement experience, so we've advanced in that regard, in addition to all the work that you've done since. So I'm just unsure about the number of iterations there on the criteria. Could you comment on it? It's a totally open question. I'm just not sure that a one-stop, okay, here's the weighting, do you think this is right? And it may be that as you go through the process, you can always choose to come back. So, thoughts?
Want to talk about that? Well, yeah,
sure. Currently, the criteria that we've been exploring is really based on the public value. So, you know, when we think about that, you know, health and human impacts, you know, the value financially, the diversity, equity, inclusion goals, you know, so we've kind of got these broad criteria.
Which is different than before, right? I remember we had environment, economy.
Yeah, I mean, it's... So we've reviewed that. And actually, Dan Pitzler and the team at CH2M are going to be part of that process, so you'll be familiar with the process they went through as far as like evaluating the environmental impacts. The idea behind coming back to council is really, you know, they're all important, but they all can't be weighted the same way. In the case of these contracts, it's probably going to look a lot different than some of the other contracts that you would see, and really making sure that the things that are most important in there carry the most weight. Some of those are already have already been finalized. If we think about, you know, when it comes to diversity, equity, inclusion, we know that that's 20 points. That's, you know, that's fixed. But what we don't know is, you know, does cost look different for disposal than it does for transport? Because we know that transport's going to have the greatest variance in those environmental impacts. Perhaps that is where we would want to see more points. Yeah. So that's really the exercise. We've not finalized that. We've shared those broad evaluation criteria with the industry that we met with, so they're aware of it. We've pointed people back to the RFP for transport as kind of a guidance on what we'll probably be considering moving forward.
Okay. It's not finalized. If I could just final it to close.
Sure.
So what would help me, I'm firmly bought into the public benefits and really appreciate the framework that you're moving forward with. But two aspects of it that I'm wondering about, and so maybe when you bring those criteria to me, if you could just bring what we'd used the last time, that will just ground me, that's all. You know, jobs continue to be really important, so I'm curious about that. But we've really advanced our own resources on minimizing greenhouse gas emissions, particularly through transportation and the climate smart strategy. And so I'm not sure. I would like to see that played out. And I know it comes under the environment, but in terms of weighting, I'm just going to be really curious about that and seeing how we're advancing that compared to what we landed on with our current contract. So that's the context from me. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilor Chase.
Right. Thank you for the presentation. I think that the timeline looks good, and I really gravitated to the public benefits part of the presentation. And I think to Councilor Harrington, just thinking about the criteria and how we're going to shape those and how much these public benefits will help guide that. And so it seems to me an important place to sort of be on the same page. So the first three really resonated with me. The next three almost seemed like strategies in a way to get toward highest and best use of materials. That is an environmental strategy to make sure that we're using our resources as wisely as possible, adaptive and responsive, again helping us manage our materials in an environmentally sound way, getting good value. So, you know, I guess that's just a reflection on that. The other areas I didn't see that I really liked in the presentation was the focus on diversity and inclusion in our workforce. That was one of the areas that I thought was important. And I think a statement on the public benefit side that I didn't see that in here in terms of a diverse and inclusive economy, or that as part of our strategy and thinking that economic sustainability of a region and being a diverse and inclusive community is part of that. So I heard you saying that very clearly, and I really appreciate it. And like that. I just thought maybe the public benefits section is a place to make sure that's articulated and clear. The other was, maybe it's under environments, but maybe it's even under health, but just congestion, thinking about, how when we're thinking about rail or barge or trucking, what are factors in terms of congestion specifically. We hear a lot about that in different discussions, and so that was something that just seemed to sort of be an important factor that I didn't necessarily see in here. But so those are my reflections on that.
Catherine, did you have another question?
No. Okay. Oh, so sorry.
That's all right.
Thank you.
So, Bob, I'll let you go in a second, but I think my comment would be the answer to question number two. I guess this looks like an okay schedule, although we see you in the summer of 2017 and then not again until the fall of 2018, according to this, I think. Unless the unasterisked ones are council meetings rather than council work sessions, but I assume they don't involve the council at all in terms of a formal meeting process. But so we will then be doing the work with you, evaluating criteria and the criteria waiting sometime this coming summer, and that gives us a full year and a half, year to publish those criteria, discuss them with the industry, maybe come back to us for potential modification, and then application for the process and application of the criteria. Have I got that pretty much?
So are you suggesting, Tom, that there might want to be a check-in between summer 17
and thinking,
fall of 18? I think that's what Councilor Harrington's
actually very clear.
I suspect that as you release, by the time you release the RFP, get ready to release the RFP, you will have had the conversation with the other partners in terms of what the criteria look like. Is that a fair assumption? And so maybe a check back with us as to what those final versions look like. That way, if we plan that now, it won't be a surprise to us in the fall. Otherwise, I think the answer to the first question is I won't need much more information than I'm going to get just sort of in my normal routine of being a liaison. So, Bob, did you have
a... I will just follow up on what you just said, Mr. President. I had written, I was very pleased with the presentation, and that was about it. But I greatly appreciate the comments that have been made by my colleagues. And I think the takeaway is you can't err on the side of including the council too much in evaluation of the evaluation criteria.
Well, you'll tell us.
Yeah, so don't tempt us. Be here and talk to us about it.
Okay. Anyone else have anything more to say? Any other questions you guys have for us?
Great stuff. Thank you.
Good job. Thank you.
Recap real quickly.
Sure. Go ahead.
Do I have time for a recap?
Yep. You do.
So what we heard quite consistently across the table is we've come back more than once on the criteria. So we've got that message very clear. We need to look a little bit more and follow up, if you can, Mr. Craig, on our influence around private facility operations and how they conduct business. last time. We need to double check what we used last time and be sure we bring that forward so we can compare if and how things have changed since we did this several years ago. And adding two criteria, we need to consider how to reflect diversity in there in some fashion, since we do emphasize that quite a bit in this process, and also consider congestion and how that fits in. Perhaps de-emphasize a little bit the three, four, five, and six are public benefits and raise the first two. But I think we'll get to that at the criteria exercise when we come back.
And that was my comment about the importance of those four or five. It was about whether those are benefits or strategies to get us into those benefits.
All right. So I think that's where we got that. And we'll be sure to check back in multiple times on the criteria.
Thank you. Great.
Thank you very much.
Okay, then. Building the RTP investment strategy. Wait for the flow of people. There's no responsive inflow of people.
They're waiting to talk about the RTP.
What kind of a deal is that? Did they chose not to come in and listen about solid waste? Do they think that we only deal with RTPs? I think they ought to be exposed to the full.
There's a bunch of them. There may not have been enough chairs for
them. Yeah. We'll just throw more trucks on the road. How's
there you
that?
Go.
We'll show up in the freight network.
Yes, please.
Make sure they're paid.
Do they pay weight mile tax if they're carrying our stuff?
So, guys, just so you all know, Councillor Brian has to leave at 3:15, and Councillor Kelsey has a new one back to work, so let me know 4 or 4:00. So, FYI.
Not that we can make a decision anyway, but it'll mean you have to repeat. But you're the speed talker. They figure you.
She is the speed talker.
And minus the same thing Emily wanted to say, which is here's another chapter of the RTP we need to talk to you about and get your direction on. And this one's important since we're starting to get to the financial part and also mentioning the financial part. We've been talking to you about all day long, and pretty soon we're going to talk to you about the planning. We'd like to start talking about it today. So, to put a little bit more of a clear point on what we want to do today, there are three specific items we want some discussion and direction on. One is the RCP policy framework itself. Two is the evaluation framework. And three is the funding framework. We're going to give you sort of a first level look at this, and then based on your direction, we'll have additional conversations over time.
Did one of the buttons get pushed?
Alright, well, so next slide is the same one you see on every RTP slide that basically says what are we trying to do with the RTP and why are we having it. Again, it's about safe, efficient, affordable transportation. And so hopefully they have as well as we do. And then the one after that is sort of the 5 phase timeline. Again, we have multiple problems we're solving for the RTP, and it is based on multiple policy documents that does at this point. And so let's dive into the
meeting. Yeah, great. So thank you, Larissa. Just in terms of the overall policy framework and attachments 1 and 2 to your packet, what that reflects is the current adopted policy reflected in the 2014 regional transportation plan and an updated vision statement. I'll come back to that a little bit. We would like to get some further direction from you on updates to that vision. Also, just recognizing that the 2014 policy framework is our starting point as we go forward into developing our investment strategy, but there will be opportunities to further review and refine the goals, particularly what has come up through the recent council discussions around safety and equity.
and more recently at MPAC, wanting to have more emphasis on transparency and the decision-making process. So there is some specific feedback that we've been getting as we've been rolling this out to other policymakers that will be some we'll bring back to the work groups to identify any potential refinements. Also, recognizing that our performance targets that are described in this policy framework are what's in there today. We still have work to do to address MAP 21 over the coming year, and we'll be updating those performance targets and bring them back to you for further direction. And then all of the strategies that you've been hearing about so far, you've heard from Lake on the transfer, the safety strategy, Jamie on the transit strategy, Tim will be giving you an update on the freight strategy next week. So those pieces, as they continue to develop, may also identify additional refinements that we would bring back to you, particularly major policy things that are based through those efforts. That would be what we bring back to you for further direction. So this reflects a much shortened vision statement than what is in your assessment one. We presented this to MPAC last week. Their feedback was, this is all great, but it's way too long. What we started off with at the December 2nd forum was something close to this, really. But then as we heard at the forum conversations and then subsequent to that, people wanted to see all the things that they cared about and what they want this RTP to deliver. MPAC's recommendation, and this was not a formal action of them last week, but basically is that we need to be really concise about what our vision is for the future, recognizing that all those pieces are important, but they don't need to be articulated in a single statement, and that as a whole, we should be working to simplify all of our communication materials around the RTP, how we're articulating what it's trying to accomplish, how we're describing what it is actually delivering, in communities, and so that's something that we'll continue to care for. But today, basically, I'm looking forward. Does this resonate with you? Are you, supportive of where this mission is? Because MPAC will be asked to make a recommendation on this next week, and JPAC the following. So this is an opportunity for you to also provide any further direction to staff. The framework also includes the adaptive goals. So we're not.
Wait a sec. Are we going to have to wait till the very end to give you the feedback on?
She's going to leave in 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, however you guys want to enter meeting is fine with us.
Well, at some point.
I can pause here, we can do that here.
Is that okay if I?
Because Shirley's got to leave. Why don't we?
I just want to clarify. This is the this when you say revised shared vision. This is MPAC's recommendation.
This
includes MPAC's recommendation.
This includes refinements identified by MPAC, and then TPAC made this as their recommendation to JPAC last Friday.
Okay, thank you.
And
which
Kathy
is shortened from attachment one.
Okay.
So I'm fine with this vision. The problem is that there's information from the attachment one vision that isn't then reflected in revised goals. So we're losing clarity on the direction for the vision if we don't also incorporate some of that information into the goals. That's the point I wanted to make.
So in the language, so your first page of attachment one, the very bottom of the longer vision, that emerged, all of those pieces are reflected in the RTP goals in some way already. So if these were things that were highlighted out of the existing RTP goals statement and the discussion that MPAC had and TPAC had on Friday, that these are ways in which we're getting to those goals and that overarching vision, and that we should find a way to describe these, but not as part of the vision, but to whether they're a strategy. The concern TPAC had Friday was that by listing these or identifying these as strategies, these may not be fully comprehensive of all the strategies that the RTP would
My concern is, I agree with you that they get embedded through the entire set of goals and objectives, but it's that level of visibility gets pushed further down because some, like well-maintained, that's therefore only in one specific objective out of a whole wider set. So That's it's the level of scale. So we might want to look at some of those. That's all.
So these are the goals here, and what I'm this time recommending in a revision to those as we go forward. And then the other, so that's sort of part one. Part two is the overall evaluation framework. And we, in past briefings of you, I talked about the work that's been underway to update how we're evaluating the overall system performance, as well as expanding how we're addressing and considering transportation equity as part of the system evaluation. So in your packet of attachment three, has those updated performance measures that are for the system level and transportation equity that we're recommending for testing as part of this initial evaluation phase. In addition, last December, January, your direction, we have been working with TPAC and MPAC to develop a project evaluation approach to this RTP. That is described as an overview and attachment four to your packet. And essentially what we're recommending at this time, and TPAC concurred and made this recommendation to JPAC on Friday, is that we pilot a small number of projects in this first round of the RTP call for projects, looking at projects that are $10 million or more that are likely to be funded with state, federal, federal, regional dollars. Larger agencies choose five projects that they would like to test the criteria on. Smaller jurisdictions would pick one project. And this is really to help us all get used to looking at sort of individual impacts of projects to test out how well the criteria are. There's still a concern that they're being double counting across the criteria. I think in this pilot phase that we go through this summer, we will then work with TPAC and MTAC to identify refinements that we would then bring back for your review and policy direction on moving forward. What we have laid out, though, is that in the second round of the call for projects next year, as we go in, this summer, we're going to do a draft, about the draft list. I'll talk a little bit more about that. But we'll have an opportunity to refine that draft list of investments against what we learned from the overall system evaluation, the transportation equity analysis, also public input. We'll have an opportunity for the public to comment on the draft list that is created, that was developed by our partners this summer. We'll do that in January. And that the combination of the public input and the system evaluation and equity analysis will help identify further refinements to the project list as we work towards finalizing the overall investment strategy. We also know that we're going to have new funding information, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. So all of those pieces are going to help inform that refinement. But as we go through that refinement, all projects that would be above $10 million that are likely to see federal, state, or regional dollars would go through the updated project evaluation criteria as part of the process. This just shows at a high level the overall process leading to the call for projects that we, similar to what we've done in past RTP updates. So in July, or June and July, we would go through that. We would put the draft strategy through the coordinating committees, really relying on them, and ODOT, TriNet, and SMART will be participating through the coordinating committee discussions. Portland will be convening their own coordinating committee within their agency. Also, the court will be involved in those discussions to identify, following the policy direction, the projects to bring forward to create that overall investment strategy. We'll evaluate it this summer, as I said. We'll be continuing to, in early next year, have policy direction back from you and MPAC and JPAC about how we refine that based on what we learned. Again, working to prepare for a final draft investment strategy that will go out to the public for review in June, late June of next year, leading into the final adoption process. All three, the transit, safety, and freight strategies, will be continuing to be developed parallel to this. They will be informed by the system evaluation, but also will result in final draft strategies that will also be going out for public review next summer of 2018. The other piece, just as a reminder, we've also talked about the regional transportation plan at two levels of investment, what we think we can accomplish, what we call the constrained, financially constrained set of investments, but then also recognizing that part of your direction that you've given staff in the past is that we want this RTP constrained, RTP update to really clearly articulate or show sort of our current funding outlook, and that's part of what we're going to share here today. What we thought was going to be the case is the case, but it shows the importance of having additional strategic priorities that the region agrees are important, that are needed, and really begins building that pipeline of projects that the region has agreed are important for us to pursue beyond what we can afford today or in the next 20 years based on that updated constrained forecast. And so another piece of direction that we are looking to you for today is just the overall size of that strategic list of investments, and that really becomes a place where we're working with our partners to plan, fund, and build those investments in addition to the constrained set of investments over the plan period. To help inform that overall sizing, staff looked at other regions and how well they did in terms of going beyond their financially constrained revenue based on large-scale transportation investment packages. And so these are, we looked at the Salt Lake area, the Seattle area, and also the LA area. And these were case studies that were part of some of the best practice trips that you all were involved in that we brought to the leadership forum. And basically what we've done in past RTPs is our strategic level has been about 50% more than the constrained RTP, and that's what you see at the top level. What you can see on a per capita basis for those other peer regions that are ranged from anywhere from 20% to 47%. Because of the size of the overall draft constrained forecast, TPAC discussed this along with the draft forecast on Friday. They have recommended that JPAC consider basically doubling for purposes of this call for projects as a starting point. There's a lot of concern from our partners about how constrained this financial forecast, and I'll go to that in a moment, in terms of what happens to all of the needs, all of the priorities that have been identified through past planning efforts. There's a lot of very good projects in the plan that would not be able to fit within this updated constraint forecast.
So can we pause there just a second? The 2014 financial constraint is still well above existing.
Yes, mm-hmm. Anywhere else.
And we went through the same problem in 2010 and the cycles before that.
This is something that started with me. I don't understand the rationale to double it. Pardon me for interrupting.
I just want to make sure we're clear.
It makes Metro be the bad guy because Metro's making us balance the checkbook.
So it looks like to me.
So what this shows here is a comparison of the grid a little bit lighter. So this is something that we have been raising as we anticipated that there would be concern on our partners' part of what this updated constraint forecast is. This is more constrained than we had in the past, and there's a variety of reasons for why it's more constrained that we've talked about. Aging infrastructure, more and more money is being spent on maintaining the system that we have as opposed to being able to expand to address our needs. The purchasing power of some of the revenue sources continues to decline as fuel efficiency it grows, and the revenues are not increasing with inflation. So this forecast is one of the best forecasts, I would say, that we have in terms of our current funding outlook. It's based on, for the local revenues, it's based on local adopted TSPs. It does not assume an increase increase of local revenue sources beyond what they have in their existing plan. It also assumes modest increases in the federal and state portion of the overall revenue in terms of the looking to the future. What is shown up here are the sort of capital side of those revenues that we have used as a basis for establishing targets for developing that overall investment strategy. And to the right, you can see what the overall total for the RTP, for the 2014 RTP, to provide a little bit more of an apples to apples comparison. So while the past constraints have been more rosy, this one does not have as many aspirational assumptions built into it than our past RTP, and I think has made it challenging for our partners to think about this big of a reset of our constrained priorities list, recognizing all of the more recent policy direction that JPAC and the Council have given around the three bottleneck projects, the two transit projects, Climate Smart. So I think I'll stop there.
So this illustrates the doubling of the fiscally constrained.
Yes, so the first column is what we would basically be building in a draft strategy, a constrained priorities list that reflects this updated financially constrained list, and then a second level of investment, that strategic list, would then be another increment shown in the second column there.
So just before Councillor Craddock leaves, just so you know, I have some proposals on attachment 1 and 2 dealing with goals and objectives that you won't get a chance to hear, and then a concern with regard to attachment 5 as well.
May I just ask, obviously I'd like to be brought up to meet with you later, but if you could include the two other councillors that are not here today, that would be helpful.
Awkward forum for making final determinations about what our view is as we go forward, given the number of people.
I apologize.
Well, we'll make the best of what we've got today.
I have four brains at your disposal.
No, actually, I just wanted to ask that question for clarity here, and then I'll bring things up through the sequence.
Okay, Bob.
Okay, maybe I'm in the wrong sequence. I'm just trying to get my head around this. I don't understand where the potential revenue resources that would be represented by the state funding package that's under consideration would fall inside or outside of column 1 or column 2.
So I'm going to take a stab, and then Ted can help correct me. But basically, in that first column, the $1.52 billion, that essentially assumes the draft transportation bill for $1 billion for the three bottleneck projects. Mm-hmm. Then beyond that, $500 million is from their typical revenue sources. So that $1 billion of that $1.5, if the legislature does not pass that bill or adopt something that is different from that, then that is going to affect, that number will change to reflect whatever that action is.
And does TriMet's number then include a 2018 regional bond for?
It does not. So what is included in the TriMet number is what we can assume based on past history of the federal New Start, Small Starts program of about $1.4 billion over the plan period, and then the RUFA bonding for HCT that has been basically bonded out, I think, through 2034. So that's another $1.4 billion.
I can certainly see the wisdom of a contingent provision for successful adoption or successful campaign and adoption of TriMet's measure in 2018, because we do intend to have a Southwest Corridor project. So I think there's a shared interest in somehow finding an appropriate way of representing the effort that's now contemplated regionally and at the state. But going beyond those, I don't understand the rationale for it.
Can I comment on that a little bit?
Of course. I'm asking the question in the form of a statement, I guess.
I
think, so we are, in terms of the assumptions that we can build in, we have, there's direction from FHWA, and as you know, we follow the more conservative side of that direction this year. In terms of thinking about potential revenue measures, or things that we cannot count, that we don't know, and that are a little bit outside the path of ways that we've done things normally, I like to think of those as being represented by the strategic number, which is obviously sort of, it's a very general number, but for that, the projects that would be built by a future revenue measure, would come off that strategic list, right? That's the menu from which we would identify those projects. And we will have, in the financial chapter of the RTP, we say, here are different mechanisms that would produce potential revenue. Here's roughly what property tax increase of blank would look like. Here's roughly what our modeling shows about a congestion pricing program. Here's roughly what a 2 cent gas tax increase every 5 years would look like. And so we will identify those revenue mechanisms and talk about how they fit into that process. But to go through and say we're specifically counting on this and counting on this and counting on this, tends to create a lot of political angst, and also for the purposes of a 35-year planning document, 25-year planning document, has us built into many slides. You know, if we had done this the way that we have done it for the past 10 years, we would have very optimistic and very different assumptions about the federal role that aren't real anymore.
Councillor Stacey, is any of that helping you? Because it's not helping me.
No, sorry.
So
sorry.
Part of it, I'm wondering, is about the presentation of this, because the numbers in both of those columns are the exact same. But your title, constrained versus strategic, is different. So I'm really...
And the year frame.
What you're saying is, in this slide right now, is constrained plus this strategic continuing of that trend plus question mark. Right? And you've got the current over on the right is what is in the 2014 constrained RTP. So we've got this uncertainty around our strategic priorities moving forward. Right?
Yes.
But this slide doesn't reflect that uncertainty. And part of what I have difficulty with the approach, I don't mean to take away from your flow of this, however. This council has given direction that what we really want to be doing is growing the pie. And I am thinking, or feeling at this point, really, that policy direction is being lost, being pushed instead or pulled by technical direction of, let us think this way until you make us do this, which is the complete opposite of getting us all to agree that we're going to grow the pie. To put it differently, on your very last slide, which is in some ways it comes across as a funnel, I'd like to see that flipped. We're trying to grow the pie, to go from a constrained project list to add on longer-term priorities and have additional priorities. Because I don't like the idea that we're putting it negatively when we can be putting it positively about growing a pie. And growing the pie towards what we can accomplish together. That's the spirit that we've really been focused on for over a year, at least. In a way, I heard a piece on NPR sometime in the last 24 hours about taxes versus investments. Imagine instead of using the word taxes, we use the word investments. After all, that's what we do with tax money, right? And so how do we turn it around to the positive of what we're trying to achieve? And you're bringing us valuable data, but it's how we are orienting it that continues to bring up this negative aspect, and that falls just on Metro, in my opinion, versus being a collective thing.
So, put that in a somewhat different way, if I can interrupt. There's no reasonable likelihood that I can imagine that having an ambitious revenue strategy would result in exactly the same amount by jurisdiction, double from the first column to the second. there has to be some more articulation of what things could be done with what revenue resulting that would result in an additional number for ODOT or TriMet for the region, because we're now talking about mechanisms that might result in revenue flows from the J-PACT table as opposed to...
And if I can maybe add to that just a bit. For example, on the left-hand column, Washington County has considerably more per capita than, or has considerably more spending than the other jurisdictions, in part because they have a special levy that that adds to that. But why would you assume that that would then double into the second category? I wouldn't assume, quite frankly, that Washington County is going to say, okay, let's double the amount of money we're spending on transportation from what we are now. But it is the amount that they're spending now that gives them the edge over everybody else. So it doesn't look realistic to me.
So I think we're getting the same thing from really all of them, which is a random 100% on top of a strategic 100% isn't really strategic. And if there is some more strategic way to convey what if we pass a ballot measure, what if we pass a state package, that isn't just 100% plus 100% equals 200%. And I think you're also right that we have done a good job over the last year of building a regional call for growing the pie. It's not just in this room. And that's partly the difficulty of the TPAC conversation when they say, well, aren't we trying to grow the pie? Why are you giving us these realistic numbers to earlier points being made? And so I think what I wanted to make sure that we are conveying clearly is the idea of a strategic project list being on top of a call for projects. So in the past, you do a call for projects. Everybody puts their hopes and dreams in. There's always more projects than we can afford. We figure out how to get to a list that reflects accurate reflection.
That's a cutting.
Right.
Versus a growing.
Crushing of the hopes and dreams that puts you all in a difficult position every single time. But what we're trying to do with the strategic project list is start building a menu of, if we had more money, what would we start using it for? It's the same conversation we're having on multiple conversations, same with housing. If the region got more money, what would we do with it? And the answer isn't, well, we would just build everything in the RTP, or we would just give it all to TriMet to finish the light rail system. There is some strategic thought around a balanced investment system. So when we pass a ballot measure, some of it will have transit, some of it will have active transportation, and some of it will have highways.
Great. Well, where do you come up with the numbers? You come up with the numbers by having an articulable strategy for going for this kind of revenue from this kind of source at this level of government, as opposed to just saying, hey, this is what it looks like now, let's double that magically. You know, Tom's point about Washington County, they've cut out a slice of their general fund. That's what it amounts to today because of the...
Property tax goes into general
fund. So it's property tax. Washington County is a growing county. Things will change, and it's hard for me, Tom, to think that Washington County will choose even to maintain the current percentage of its property tax base for transportation projects as its growth as an urban county puts more strain on that same property tax revenue. So doubling it without coming up with a new revenue source, and identifying that as a strategy we need to undertake in conjunction with the desire to get these things that we know we need, makes a lot more sense to me. We could box it up the way FTA wants to see the revenue, USDOT wants to see it. Here's our constraint, here's our strategic, and here are the steps in between that get us to the strategic number, and we will probably progress along those steps as we gel and implement strategies to get the money. I don't mind having a shopping list as long as it's tied to an articulation of what it will take at each level of government to get that, not just 2 cents a year out of the legislature.
Well, and here's another reason for doing that, I think, just in case you haven't heard enough.
Sorry.
Raise your hand when you've heard enough. I come from a part of the region that where there is a narrative that existed way before I got there, that the problem with regional government is you take money from us and you put it into regional projects, and so we wind up funding way more of the regional projects than anybody else. Okay, show them those numbers and tell them they're wrong. We're going to raise $19 billion for regional transportation projects. And Washington County, according to that, is going to raise considerably more than Portland.
The per capita.
For cap, for example, yeah. In order to do that. And I think you've just fed into the narrative
right.
In a way that's hard to overcome.
You guys, this is, you, many of you have lived in more RTPs than
so
I have.
So we're saying this doesn't work for us.
And so we hear that. And so, again, I just, we're having a conversation where we're seeking direction for you, from you on both a technical level and a political level. And I think for the
and a policy
time,
level.
Well, right.
And a political.
Policy goes between
right.
the technical and the political, I think, which is why this is
but it should be mentioned. This is my one time when I get to tell you which of these goals and objectives I have a problem with. And if I don't get to do it today by 4 o'clock, I'm posed.
I think they have to come back.
I don't think this process
I'm
is
waiting,
over by a long
I'm
way.
Waiting for that part of the agenda so okay. I can go back to attachment 1 and 2 of the 10 that I read.
Well, there are three things we want to get feedback on. One is the vision, one is the evaluation, and one is the finance. And the finance one we know is the hardest one because you are all articulating this dance we do every time between the reality of the money that we have and the aspirations of what we want to get to. And so we hear what you're saying. That's why we're having this conversation.
So I'm trying to get from
the vision.
I'm trying to get to some action. So, frankly, I'm unclear. I shouldn't say confused. Page 4 of the worksheet talked about a package 1 10-year constrained, a package 2 full constrained, a package 3 full RTP. And then later on it talked about having a 2018 level and then some additional priorities. And now I've got a third model and a fourth model, and I kind of need to throw up my hands. Because I don't know what model to walk away from this work session with, or if, yeah.
So I think this is the model here, but it's trying to describe it from a modeling perspective. But this is basically, we're trying to build an investment strategy. The investment strategy is comprised of two levels. So a constrained project list that's divided into the first 10 years of the constrained and then the second 13 years of the constrained list. And that's what that first column of the funding target represents. And then the strategic project list is those additional priorities that if we had more money, that as a region, these are things that we feel is Council, JPAC, and PACFIL are important to work together to find funding, whether it's at the federal level, state level, or regionally, or locally, to build over the next 25 years, because they're very important projects to communities across the region. These are projects, all of the projects that we're asking our partners to bring forward, things that they've identified as priorities.
So I don't disagree with the having these three buckets. What I'm reacting to from this graphic is it's a funnel versus growing a pie. Okay? That's why I was thinking, somehow do you flip it, yet what's the relationship with the arrows? So all of our graphics need to go towards that spirit of how are we growing the pie so that we move from the small constraint to a higher level constraint. And, hey, maybe we'll get to this fully strategic. So that's what I'm having a difficult time with this graphic, okay? The spirit of what you're trying to get to, I don't have a disagreement with. But the years here, I have a little difficulty with two slides before. Because here it's 2018 to 2040, and over here you're talking about 2018. So it's too many models. What are we really aiming for, and how are we going about it? So, and if we're having a problem with it, imagine how mayors and city councilors are going to take it.
So those first two green things are the first column.
Correct.
And the blue thing is the third column.
But two slides forward, it doesn't say 2018 to 2027. It says 2018 to 2040. So these are some of the things that I'm just in real time trying to make sure I follow it.
And while we're on this subject of analogies and ways of depicting this, I think of it as a ladder. We can't get to those upper levels unless we figured out how we're going to build a ladder that gets us the revenue that enables us to accomplish that.
Right.
So there's got to be a simultaneous discussion of what we want and what it would take
we
to
need more,
raise that revenue.
We need more piles of
what
dough.
What sources and decision-making bodies are going to have to be recruited to say, yes, we can try to do that. So that there's an understanding that just because you've got the first call for projects and the second call for projects doesn't mean very much unless there's a stair step that will get
yep.
you to that.
Yep.
I don't know how better to say it.
That makes sense.
Yep.
It makes sense, and I think as part of the work going forward, so what we're trying to kick off is actually starting to build, sort of pieces that could be part of that investment strategy. There needs to be policy discussion around the funding options, and I think that's work that Councillor Dirksen has said he is committed to continuing to convene through the JTAC Finance Subcommittee and other mechanisms through whatever direction you all provide to that work. That is part of what also needs to be happening.
We're all going to be on that journey together.
Yeah.
We're on it together.
And so that those discussions should and will continue going forward. What we're trying to do is identify what are those priorities sort of in the near term for the next 10 years, what are the top things that as a region fit within this constrained forecast that are really important, that also are following through on the policy direction that you all have given and JTAC around the left of policy priorities. We know this three for all the following projects, two transit projects. Climate Smart does not probably fit in the constrained forecast, but it should fit in the strategic level.
Sam.
I appreciate all the comments, and I guess I also as somebody who's not on JPAC and jumping and diving in as much, I feel like something that lacks understanding for me is why, we're looking at a financially constrained model, and the more we make that larger, the harder it is to prioritize, and then we get put in the position of cutting it down. And then, I understand we're talking about capital projects, we're talking about improvements. The state has a role in providing maintenance funds, but I think of us as really contemplating how we're going to generate resources, but then when I don't see the maintenance kind of side of the equation, that also makes me kind of, it's harder for me to understand, where does that fit in? And I guess I don't understand why that's not more part of the conversation, or if I'm missing it, it is more of it. But it doesn't seem to be a present in the conversation with JLAC and others, even though we're talking about capital investment and all those different areas. Or is it more confused and then I'm not?
Is it part of the overall funding or revenue forecast picture that we've been trying to make? So part of the work that we've done working with the state and with China and local governments is understanding what are the local revenues, what are their sources, what are they being spent on? And so what was presented in that funding targets table on the capital side reflects what was left over after taking care of maintenance. So for on average, I think 70% of local revenues are being spent to maintain the system. So those were already taken off the table. From the state side, I don't know what the percentage is of ODOT, but a significant portion of ODOT spending, probably 80% is the number I would suggest it's going towards maintaining the system. China has to demonstrate that whatever system they put out there and operate, that they actually have the revenue to maintain it. So those revenues are already taken off of the table for purposes of setting these capital funding targets. And the targets are intended to provide guidance for how big of a system, given what revenues are remaining that can be spent on capital, but not going to an accounting for every color of money and what kinds of projects
That's not a level of detail that we're really able to do within an RTP. We generally try to match up, but we are matching individual projects to individual funding sources. That's part of the work that our local partners will do and ODOT will do as they identify projects that they would like to bring forward through this call for projects. But we're trying to balance what is a constrained forecast that is a conservative constrained forecast with the investment priorities that they identify in the plan. And then, you know, the policy direction that we are seeking is how much larger of a system, because we know that there are a lot of needs out there. I think what this more constrained forecast has done has made it more challenging for them in this first step of building an investment strategy to start winnowing down. I think what I would say in terms of characterizing some of the discussion around the TPAC table is it's a politically very hard decision to make about what projects are going forward and what projects don't go forward at all because of a more constrained even strategic. We have very constrained, and then we have very too tight of the strategic is not providing a place. And so their recommendation is for this first call for projects being more ambitious than maybe the final plan next year ends up being, but have the system evaluation help inform some of the further winnowing that may need to be done to be able to get to a strategic level of investment that the region is committed towards pursuing different funding options. And so having what kinds of funding options will help be able to pay for and that the region is willing to commit to doing. Because we do this every RTP and we end up having a big list at the end and some fuzzy assumptions about what we say we're committed to doing but we aren't following through.
Right.
So this
and
is part of that evolution.
We know that doesn't work.
I think the resistance to this is straight up doubling across the board.
And given the timeline, this will not lead to a successful regional forum 4 because, as proposed, double it, let us go work the system, and somehow you start meeting with committees, the policy committees in December, and go through December and January data so we have a February regional 4 Leadership Forum 4 that's somehow going to really help us get our arms around all the funding, and I just don't see it.
My project's in, I don't have to think about this anymore. It's,
right. It's we're not making people really get the problem.
How do I get my project in is a better discussion topic for all of us.
So I still have questions on prior items.
Yeah.
So back on attachment 1, where the proposed vision is now a subset of what was in the packet. So I'm on the real time trying to respond to that. The very specific item that I don't see reflected in the goal statements is well maintained. Okay, so that's one that to me is lost in these various goal statements. I believe you that this full set in the second paragraph is somehow reflected in all of the objectives. But just taking another quick look, I have that concern given the change of things. Moving on to attachment 1, page 4, goal 8 in goals, the first set of 8s. Specifically under goal 8, objective 8.9 and 8.10. I'm concerned about this because it puts the realization of the climate smart strategy solely on the shoulders of Metro. But more specifically, what I'm concerned about is that the words on this need to be words, phraseology that state legislators, hello kids, and city councilors will understand. And including the accountability to that which was required of us from JTA, that legislation in 2009. And this collection of information doesn't speak to that. that being motivated. Subsequent documents, like on page 6, does talk about JTA, but that's long after we've gone over all the goals and objectives. So that's why I'm raising it forward. Then I'm on attachment 2. And now all this paperwork I have in my hand is totally mixed up. Attachment 2, I'm wanting to go to page 5, goals 10 and 11. And I can't lay my fingers on it.
There's no goals on page 5.
Oh, then I must have made a mistake on attachment 1. Yes, you're right. Oh, no, sorry. I'm on page 6. I think it is equitable access.
Attachment 2.
Must be. Mm. Is there equitable access?
I think they're all maps on those pages. Yeah. I think.
Well, what I have is we have equity access to daily needs by 2040. Like I said, lots of attachments.
So I think what you're referencing is page 6 of attachment 1, mm-hmm. and it's the access to daily needs performance targets that's in the current.
Yes, that's right. Thank you. That's what I want to talk about, because it talks about achieving. Where is it? Where? What am I not seeing now? There you go. Access to daily needs. Thank you. By 2040, increase by 50% the number of essential destinations, blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't think that is aggressive enough. You know, we adopted the active transportation plan. I'm going to continue to be a champion of realizing the completion of that in one childhood, so in 20 years. And this only achieves it half of a childhood. Well, in one childhood only achieves half of it. So this is the, I understand that this is from the 2014. This isn't good enough.
Yeah, so I'll communicate that back to the performance measure work group. Will be.
And I hope others will join me in championing that performance target. That's all. On attachment 5, let's see, we went over that. Yep, I think I'm going to keep being a voice for achieving the Climate Smart Strategy and our adopted plan. I don't think this collection of documents really, like in the memo, we have a regionally adopted plan that we constructed together, and it talked about implementation. And I feel like that, it was a little aggressive, and I feel like we're losing that now. And instead, we're going back to the old domain of, just give us a bunch of projects. And I lost that. This is what we regionally adopted. So you were trying to speak to it in this package set. Don't look so bored, really. It's exciting stuff. You were trying to communicate it in terms of this 10-year, and you were unsure if that the CSC would make it in that 10-year or the next constraint. And what sticks with me is that we adopted that regionally, and I don't want to lose that agreement. I don't know exactly how to reflect it in these different charts and all the various information, because I know you're trying to give an overview on one part. She and I had a lunchroom conversation. I just felt it was a little lost. I think all the goals are important, but I thought those two particular ones were ones that I needed to redouble my efforts to bring voice to.
Particularly with the Climate Smart Community, in that the aggressive nature of what we came up with in Climate Smart Community was an occasion where rather than leading to a more aggressive strategy, we actually were drugged to a more aggressive strategy by our partners in the region, who were saying basically, no, we think we can be more aggressive on this. So let's don't lose that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's don't lose that spirit somehow along the way by kind of not being very aggressive ourselves.
Thank you. I understand a whole lot more than I did from Regional Forum 3. So good work, particularly to you liaisons and staff.
Very briefly, Mr. President, just a couple more items. Councillor Harrington mentioned the important role of active transportation investment in achieving the climate smart outcomes. Another really large component is transit service increases, and very significant transit service increases. And in the same way that I was hectoring you that we need to tie ambition to revenue planning, I think we need to be in constant communication with and encouragement of the TriMet in putting forth strategies for achieving additional service hours as well as a low-income fare capacity as they increase those hours over the life of this plan in a way that achieves the transit equivalent within one child's childhood. Significant increases in how much we get around by transit or able to get around by transit because of investments in service hours. That won't always be very expensive. It will always be expensive, but not necessarily rail service to accomplish that. I mean, service hours in all categories. Second item, this is kind of tangential to what we're talking about, except that it's one of those rungs on the ladder of increasing revenue and tying it to performance and outcomes. The attachment 6 listing of ways of building the RTP investment strategy uses language to describe tolling, congestion pricing, the like, in relatively constrained ways. High frequency vehicle / tolled lanes and express lanes. This focuses on language that would encourage us to think about ways of monetizing expansions of the road network, as opposed to looking at tolling and congestion pricing and other use pricing of the existing transportation network. We have been cautious about getting out ahead of our skis or the region's skis on discussion of using those kinds of tools like congestion pricing. But we've seen the emergence of a discussion in the legislature of a tolling congestion pricing or tolling pilot that is considerably more ambitious than ones we've heard of before. We have the Nature Conservancy's convening of business leaders, both on their board and in other organizations, to talk about a climate change strategy the business community can support. And there were 3 areas where they urged caution and maybe slowing down some of the efforts that others have talked about. But in the area of transportation emissions, they said very forcefully, we think we should be pursuing congestion pricing. So we're seeing a change in publicly expressed attitudes about congestion pricing, and I think it's appropriate for us to be potentially more expansive in how we talk about it in our own policy. So we leave room for that dialogue to continue, as opposed to adhering to earlier policies that we will always consider that when we're expanding the facility, but not otherwise. That's my soapbox on that issue.
Okay.
So you guys are probably going to do that. I think that's one of those.
Yeah, so we are scheduled to come back on May 30th at a work session about, and we will be bringing to you the recommendations from NPAC and JPAC on these questions, basically. We will be carrying forward TPAC's recommendation to JPAC for their discussion on May 18th tomorrow. NPAC is scheduled to make a recommendation to NPAC. Their recommendation is focused on just using the existing RTP policy framework as a starting point with this revised vision statement and then the evaluation framework.
How are you going to put this discussion up? I think you put these guys in the bad guy box. So they've had this discussion about the TPAC recommendation, so how are you going to reflect that to JPAC? Or can you at least you're already in the bad boy box. But what I don't want to do is have them carry TPAC recommendation to JPAC, have JPAC convert it, and then have it come. The bad boy box, I think, is worse the longer it goes on.
Right.
So,
I think what I...
Let's think about that one and let you all know. We're also happy often to let the counselors speak and say, staff brought this to us after TPAC. We've had a conversation and we'd like to put some more thoughts on the table around.
But I don't look at TPAC packets. I don't look at MTAC packets.
No, this is for the JPAC.
Yeah,
for
the upcoming JPAC meeting.
If the idea is to reflect the direction we got at the JPAC meeting, there's some that staff can do, and sometimes it's helpful if the council backs us up at the JPAC meeting.
And is that going to be the 18th meeting?
Yes.
Okay. So two of my colleagues on JPAC are not here today, and Shirley only got
prep JPAC.
Okay. But you'll need some.
We'll work on it and think it through. I don't want to wait too long for the case gets worse if it comes back.
Sure. An early warning that we're.
And we heard that there needs to be follow up with counselors who aren't here, so that's a.
Thank you.
And I have a couple of other questions on this packet that we could just handle offline. We don't need to belabor it here.
Ready to give it up? Give it up.
Trying to be helpful.
Council liaison updates and council.
Any council liaison updates or council communications? You can give us a report about Japan, maybe on camera or something. Would you like to?
Sure.
I've even a couple of trips I took had a lunch and learn around it.
So. Oh,
really? I never knew that. I don't recall any.
I'm sorry.
We're talking about how
Councilor Harris is going to share with
findings about resiliency and other aspects.
And I was suggesting she might think about a lunch and learn.
Oh, I think it's a great idea.
Paul Sliman went too.
Yep. That'd be great if you had some support in making that presentation.
Well, went you and just you from us?
Pardon me?
Was it just you from our shop?
I was the only elected official, but Paul Sliman was also on the trip.
I'm sure that he would be happy to collaborate with Council.
Yeah.
We'll see how we can schedule
it.
Might not be for a while. I'm not here next week.
That's okay. It remains time.
Sam, go ahead.
Well, Carlotta, I think, was going to give the report back on MPAC, and I think Kim covered most of the comments that we received around the vision statement and being much simpler. There was a conversation about, more conversation about housing and...
Did they talk about the goals and objectives at all?
I think there was so much in there.
Yeah.
And the vision statement was...
Doesn't get any better either.
I call it the Prego commercial where they say, it's in there. Everything's in there. So I think it was more just... It's all kind of... was just so much for them to digest.
Well, it's a real challenge because it's what a major update entails. And there's no getting around the fact that they're always going to be big packets.
But breaking it out, breaking it into pieces maybe, or
into the strategic.
Well, this is just on the investment strategy, right? We have a broken out transit plan, a freight plan, and whatnot. So I think staff has really done as good a job as they can for breaking it out. But this
is a big chunk.
Yeah, yeah.
Chewy.
And then Emily is going to come present the equitable housing report, remind folks about that as folks are preparing and getting their applications ready for the Community Planning 2040 grants.
I think they're called 2040 Planning development.
You were closer than I was.
2040 grants now.
I barely got the first one right,
and then.
Just don't overthink it.
So those are, they might have been one of, but that was.
We're not calling it community development block grants
anymore. No.
Hey, that's it.
Welcome to May.
All right, we're going to adjourn.
Yep.